Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In episode 2, we're hitting it out of the park. We'll start out with Colin Deaver from KAGS TV, who is the NBC affiliate here in Bryan College Station, and they have been tracking the Olympics with an eagle eye. We'll also be talking some A&M football, of course, as they open up fall camp later. But the real home run of this podcast is we have Texas A&M track star and Rio Olympian Maggie Malone in studio to talk about her upcoming trip down to Rio de Janeiro for the Olympics. So let me pass it off to the man from the zone, Zach Taylor.
What's up, guys? Well, so we got Colin in with us today. And Colin, I know you guys have been covering pretty much all the ins and outs of the Olympics since right. It started, NBC affiliate and playing everything on there. Obviously, Team USA, as of right now, has 9 gold medals. That leads everybody. 26 overall, which is leading the pack as well. So far, a really good showing. And, of course, Michael Phelps has really shown up as well for Team USA.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to watch. Since we were all kids, Michael Phelps has basically been the face of the Olympics for the United States. And now he's in his last run as an Olympian, and he's really not exactly showing anything different than he always has. He looks like he could probably go again in 2020, at least at this point. But I think what you're seeing from him is just, kind of like Michael Jordan did with the Bulls in 98. He knows it's last run and he wants to go out, as much on top as he can. And I think, 21, 22 Olympic golds now?
21,
I think. 21, and he's going to have a chance to get 22 later in the Olympics. But yeah, 21 Olympic gold medals for his career is just, incredible.
I think obviously. I saw something that the previous record owner had 20 was like back in 159 BC or something. I don't even know if they keep records back that far. I guess they've got it on some papyrus or some tablet somewhere. The Olympics have been around for a while. Yeah, something like that. Some hieroglyphics in the pyramids. But Michael Phelps has been fantastic. Some young, talented people, especially in the pool. I feel like that's really what draws everybody's attention. Katie Ledecky has been super big for Team USA, has already won 2 gold medals. She's only 19 years old. And, of course, the gymnastics team as well, the women's gymnastics team led by Texan Simone Biles. Simone Biles was able to lead that team to the gold, and they were heavily favored. And when you look at it overall, too, it seems like this year, more than any other years, there's been so much trash talk between competitors. Have you gotten that watching the Olympics, following the Olympics really closely?
Especially in the pool, there is Lily Allen, and I'm forgetting what event she was swimming, but it was yesterday, and she was going back and forth with one of the other top competitors who had been accused and I think found guilty of doping. And the other competitor was, kind of during the semifinal, she finished her heat and held up a number one. Like, I'm number one in the world. And as soon as Lily Allen gets in the pool, she wins her race, does the same thing, throws up the one, and then does an interview and says, and basically just accuses the other girl of doping. And so I think that's definitely one that sticks out to me of trash talking. Then, of course, she goes on and wins the gold medal in the event the next night and does the same thing and says, "Oh, I'm just so happy to bring a gold medal back to America and know that I did it, I did it clean." So,
and Phelps was having the big thing. Of course, everybody saw him on TV the other night. He's looking basically like he's Darth Vader's apprentice over in the corner. He's listening to music and he's got his hoodie on and he looks so angry at the world. And I know a lot of maybe not necessarily trash talk, but there is a great rivalry between both he and a French swimmer. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. You know who I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about. But
I can't remember exactly what his name is, but they've been talking about that a lot leading in to the 200-meter butterfly last night. Well, Phelps ended up winning that after he had lost out to the Frenchman in 2012. The French guy didn't even finish in the top three. He didn't even place, or at least he wasn't even on the podium. So that was a strange occurrence, I think, when you look at it. But again, Team USA was the one that came out on top in that instance.
Actually, it's Leclos.
Right.
He's South African, I think.
Oh, he's South African. Yeah, he's not French.
He's got a French name, but okay, you know, it's South African. Yeah, Leclos, and he was the one that was shadow boxing right in front of Michael Phelps before the semifinal of that event. Just, and that's where you got that picture of Michael Phelps just catatonic, staring off into the void, and Leclos is shadow boxing, trying to throw him off, and Michael Phelps is, of course, the greatest swimmer of all time and doesn't care.
And if you're wondering why you're not hearing my voice right now, we're recording this at about 9:30 in the morning, which is not normal sports writer's hour. So I'm actually sitting over in the corner doing the same look at Zach and Colin right now.
And we also have the one microphone that we have to share, too. Me and Travis are both sharing one since we got guests in the studio, but that's perfectly fine. We can make all of that work, and we do appreciate Colin coming on. Something else, too, that really strikes me, at least from the Olympic perspective, is Serena Williams got bounced yesterday. You're talking about the number one overall player in the world, and basically by a no-name is who she ends up getting defeated by. Do you think she was all the way in on the Olympics? Because it seems like if she was really on her game and if she's healthy, that she wouldn't have gotten beat like she did. She got beat in straight sets yesterday.
Right. I mean, Serena lost Novak Djokovic, who was the number one seed on the men's side in tennis. He lost in the first round. I just don't think for athletes like Serena and Novak Djokovic, tennis is not – the pinnacle of tennis is not the Olympics. So I think they just – they're here because it's okay, let's represent our country, this is great, but they don't get the same feeling that a Michael Phelps does or a Katie Ledecky does, because this is the pinnacle of swimming, is the Olympics. So winning a gold medal in swimming is what everyone wants to do. For Serena and Novak Djokovic, it's you want to get a grand slam, and a gold medal, I'm sure, is nice for them. I want to say Serena has a gold medal.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, I want to.
She does. She already has a gold medal in singles.
Yeah, so I think it's more that she is just looking ahead to, the U.S. Open and everything else that tennis has going on this year.
It seems like golf is definitely like that too. You don't have golf in the Olympics for
The top four players in the world didn't even go.
Right. You don't have golf for how many years, and basically you've got, I wouldn't say the B team, because there are still some very good golfers, some very good competitors competing in it, but. You don't have the best of the best, like you were talking right about. You're not going to have the Jordan Spieths and the Rory McIlroys, and that is sad for the fans of this game, and also doesn't bode well for golf staying in the Olympics, because if they look at it and say, well, look, we're not going to get the best players to show up and represent their country, why include it anymore? So it seems like that might be something further down the road, when you're talking about, I think they're already signed on to do it for the next Olympics, if
right.
I'm not mistaken. But
so, yeah.
After that, when you're talking about 8 years from now, whether or not golf's going to be in there, you don't know.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that golf really needs to be in there, because, we see all these guys every single weekend anyways, and we know them on a, because Jordan Spieth won the Masters. We know these
right.
guys for different reasons other than, the Olympics. I'm not really sure that they really need the quote-unquote spotlight of the Olympic Games for golf.
And that's what a lot of people, I don't think, realize when you're talking about in sports, as you talked about, swimming, the pinnacle of swimming is the Olympics. The pinnacle of gymnastics is the Olympics. The pinnacle of rifle shooting is the Olympics. But at the same time, when you're talking about sports like golf, when you're talking about sports like tennis, where these folks make a lot of money, where they have a lot of big exposure outside of Olympic years, then yeah, that's one thing that points out it's maybe not as big. It's still big, but maybe not as big as it is for other sports. And even track and field is big time whenever you're talking about the Olympics. And I know, of course, your sport is hoops. You're a big hoops fan. The team coming in this year should be an easy sweep for Team USA. I mean, do you see any other team out there that can stand in their way of a gold medal?
I don't think any team gets within 20 of them this year.
And 20 points?
I don't think anyone gets it within 20, and it's not as much because of what Team USA is doing. I mean, obviously, they have the most talent. They have the most talent every single year. That's nothing new. But I think around the world, the talent level is a little bit down in all the other countries
mm-hmm.
this go around. Spain is without their best player. Marc Gasol got hurt during the NBA regular season, so he's not playing. His brother Pau is old. and can't carry the team anymore. And all those guys for Spain that, you know, were a part of those teams in 08 and 2012 that really, if not for Kobe Bryant in 2008 and LeBron James in 2012, Spain might have won gold medals. They could have beaten us those 2 years. I think people forget how close those games were.
Yeah.
That, you know, those starters, the key contributors for that, for those Spain teams, are now kind of in their 30s and kind of past their primes. And they're 0-2 in the Olympics. They lost to Croatia on a buzzer beater. They lost to Brazil on a buzzer beater. So Spain might not even make it into the knockout phase of the Olympics. And I just don't see anybody else that can even give the USA a run for the money. Brazil, their best player is Leandro Barbosa, who didn't even start for the Warriors. Croatia, their best player is a guy who the Sixers drafted who hasn't even made it over yet. So there's just the talent level is just not there around the world. And for that, you know, that's why I just don't think anybody has a chance.
And people thought that the same way with men's basketball for the U.S. as well as women's basketball. They're also competing, and I think they're the heavy favorites. But women's soccer, everybody expects that the women's soccer team was going to dominate. They actually played to a draw last night, which isn't the end of the world. And, of course, it's not as big of a loss. And in soccer, a draw, you know, will still get you points. But at the same time, U.S. women's soccer is expected to have that gold. If they don't have it, how big of a disappointment is that if they're not able to achieve that this year?
I think it's a disappointment, especially, you know, if you're the number one team in the world and everyone expects you to win, it's always a bit of a disappointment. But I think it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about with tennis and golf, and that Olympic soccer, and it's a little bit more important on the women's side. The men's side, Olympics don't really matter at all.
Yeah.
But on the women's side, it's a little bit more important. But again, the World Cup is still the pinnacle soccer on the women's side and the men's side. So.
Right.
They just won the World Cup, and I think a lot of people will be all right if the U.S. wins the bronze or the silver medal in soccer. They'll say, okay, well, when it really mattered, you know, we dominated. We won 5-1 last year, or whatever it was.
I hate to say that the gold medal in the Olympics is a consolation prize in some instances, right, or not as important as the World Cup. But yeah, it doesn't get as much exposure.
And on the men's side of it, they bring their under 23 team.
Mm-hmm.
Across the board, around the world, that's what they do for soccer. They bring their under 23 squads. So you will have players that are on the real national team that will go to the World Cup on that team if they're under 23. But, you know, for throwing out there, Argentina, Lionel Messi's not playing.
Right.
So it's basically the Argentina B team.
And they play so much throughout the year, even on the national team and in World Cup years, qualifying for World Cups. You know, if you send them down to the Olympics, they're just going to get worn out by the end of it. And I guess that's understandable. But at the same time, it does stink whenever you can't see the top talent, the creme de la creme of a sport. And we were talking about golf earlier, then you're talking about men's soccer. It's just kind of those instances. Travis, did you want to add anything or ask Colin anything? I mean, I didn't mean to shun you out or anything.
Commandeered the mic.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm just doing my Michael Phelps over here in the corner. But, Colin, you, one thing that y'all at K-Ags have done so well over the past couple weeks is keep track of those Aggies that are in the Olympics. What stood out to you about some of these Texas A&M athletes over there in Rio that have been able to perform so far?
Well, no Aggies have won medals yet. I think that once we get to the track phase of things, which is lit a little bit later on in the Olympics, I think you will see that. Some Aggies bringing home some hardware. And, of course, I mean, DeAndre Jordan, who's on the men's basketball team, they don't even get to the medal phase for another week or beyond that. So he's probably going to win a gold medal. But, yeah, no, I think especially in the swimming, for some current Aggies, Beryl Gasteldeo, who's a swimmer for France, she swam in the finals of as part of the 4x100 team for France. You know, she was the lead leg of that, the first leg, and got them off to a good start. I think they were in fourth when she passed it over. Just last night, Sydney Pickram for Canada. She's a sophomore to be at A&M. She swam in the 200-meter IM and got sixth. And really, you know, the top three swimmers in that event we're just so far ahead of everyone else that getting sixth was, you know, to me at 19 years old was pretty impressive for her. Camille Adams is in the 200 meter butterfly for the women, qualified for the final, which is tonight, Wednesday night. That'll be on KAGS later tonight, so she can hopefully try to go win the gold medal there. Aaliyah Atkinson in the 100-meter butterfly finished fourth in 2012, finished eighth in the final this year. I'm trying to think who else has already swam. For the soccer team, Stephanie Mallerby played for South Africa. And they're done. They went through the group phase, didn't win a game, didn't score a goal. But they did draw with Brazil last night to pick up a point in their group. So she'll come back to G. Guerrieri and the Aggie soccer team this year and have all sorts of experience from playing on the national team.
Yeah, definitely. We're about at the halfway point for most of these Olympic sports. And as you mentioned, there's still plenty of Aggies left to perform. What are you looking forward to, at least kind of from an Aggie standpoint, as these Olympics round out?
You know, a guy that I really think has some potential to surprise a lot of people is Lyndon Victor in the decathlon. He's only done, I think he told me, two decathlons or three decathlons in his entire life, and he's the NCAA champion, and he has the fourth best decathlon score of any collegian ever, and he's done two or three decathlons in his life, and he won the NCAA decathlon this year. He'll be competing for Grenada in that event. That's a stacked field. Ashton Eaton, who's an American, holds the world record. He's set it, reset it a few times. If he doesn't win the gold medal, that would be a shock. But I look at Lyndon as a guy who could definitely, if things go right, if he competes well, look at him as a guy who could definitely get on the podium. Someone we're going to talk to, or you guys are going to talk to a little bit later, is Maggie Malone. And I think that she's kind of come out of nowhere on the javelin circuit, if you will, the last... last few months she was the NCAA champion as well and the U.S. champion at the trials. So we'll see how she can do in that. I mean, certainly don't want to count her out. And then for the sprinting events, particularly in the 4x400, Deanne Lindor is on Trinidad and Tobago's 4x400 team, and they are actually, Sports Illustrated every year does a thing where they pick who's gonna medal for in every event. They picked Trinidad and Tobago to get the silver medal in the 4x400, so could potentially see him do that.
Well, you segued well for us. We have Maggie Malone, who came in studio with us this week, talking about her trip upcoming to Rio, and that's coming up next. And we are here with Maggie Malone, a former Texas A&M track star turned Team USA Rio Olympian. She is taking off for Rio on Wednesday and will be down there to throw the javelin. Maggie, thanks for coming up here and doing this with us. Tell us a little bit about just what your thoughts are going down to Rio and kind of how can you even comprehend being an Olympian right now?
Oh, well, I'm glad to be here. So thank you guys for asking me to come. But I'm excited to go down. I'm ready. You know, my training's been really good. I've just been working hard and made some adjustments from trials till now. And so I'm ready to get down. I'm ready to be with Team USA and just, you know, see all the events that I need to see. But at the same time, keep my focus. You know, it's a business. Like, I'm there. This is my job. I got to get my job done. And yeah, so coming off of trials into this, like these past few weeks has really been, you know, tunnel vision towards what my goals were. And my goal is to come home with a medal. So hopefully, you know, God willing, that's what happens.
Yeah, definitely. It's probably been a little bit of an interesting experience with the Olympics already going on and you're still up here. Mm-hmm. You said you wanted to kind of train with your coaches a little bit more up here since your event is towards the end of the games. Have you watched any of the other?
Oh yeah.
What is that experience been like getting to watch the whole thing and know that you'll be down there soon?
Yeah. It's so weird because, I'll watch it and then I'm like, I'm going to be down there in like 3 days or I'm going to be down there in 2 days. Like it's very weird. And yeah, I was a little, you know, bummed out that I did miss the ceremonies, but at the same time, like my coaches and I have a plan and we did it for a reason. And the reason was to get as much training as I could in before, competing. And, you know, hopefully that just gives me a leg up on everybody else. But, yeah, it's weird watching it. The Rio games are, like, played the whole time throughout my house, like all day, every day, 24/7. Like, we have the Olympics going on, so I'm excited. I want to root for everybody. I want to meet people, and it's gonna be a great experience. I can't wait to get down there.
Yeah, so I talked to you earlier this season, mm-hmm. For a story on MyAggieNation.com, and actually I'll tweet that out again here on Wednesday when this podcast airs. But give us the Reader's Digest version about kind of this season and how you got to this point, because I think even when I talked to you earlier this year, this might have seemed a little bit off in the distance to where we are now.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't know. When did I talk to you last? Was it?
It was like a
SEC.
It was like a week or two. Well, no, it was about a month after you threw your record breaking throw. So it was a couple of weeks before the SECs.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. This is, I guess, the best way that I explain this to people is, like, this has just kind of been the year of God for me, like honest to goodness, like every goal that I set for myself, starting over a year ago, coming off of nationals after my junior year, which it didn't happen, like I didn't perform well, I didn't do well during the year. And so after that national, so it would have been June 2015 or so, I just, you know, I made a list of all these goals, which I found the other day in my room, which was random. And everything that I wrote down, like, just I had accomplished every single one of them. And then, but I didn't put down, you know, Rio Olympics. And that was one that I could add to it. But yeah, I guess going into this season, like, I've never worked harder in my entire life. Like, my coaches sat down with me and we had a plan all year. We stuck to that plan. I've been training now for over a year, the most intense training that I've ever done mentally and physically. And, you know, it's really nice to see it pay off. Like, especially, you know, I started off the season right away and I was leading the nation, and that was a surprise. Didn't think that was going to happen. And then, you know, was consistent throughout the year. Didn't really have any injuries. Thanks be to God, because it's a long season. And then won SECs, won what was it then? Regionals, one nationals, and then that's when I set that record. And then one trials, which was, did not ever think that would happen. And then to say that I'm going to the Rio Olympics, like, none of these things, like, I put them down on a list to accomplish, but I never thought they would happen. So it's just a testament to, like, what God can do with you once you just, like, you know, commit your life to Him. And I'm blessed. I love A&M. I love my coaches, and I can't wait to start competing again.
Right, right. And so you were just a little bit shy of that qualifying standard, mm-hmm. heading into the Olympic trials, and you said it was a little bit of a daunting meet for you compared to some of the other ones you had, just knowing that you needed to get just that little bit more to be able to go to Rio.
Well, I had the A standard. So I got the A standard at trial or at nationals, because that's when I broke the collegiate record. And so that, it was nice going into it, but the girls that the pros that were ahead of me, they hadn't thrown the A standard in this season, but they threw it last season and it carried over. And so their marks were farther than mine, but they still hadn't thrown it this season, but they still counted technically. Mm-hmm. So I was the one on the chopping block. Like, if anybody was not going to go to Rio, like, it was going to be me. And so I, like I said, told you earlier, like, I've never been so sick in my entire life. My coaches, we talked about it. They're like, you don't get nervous. And, like, they said, like, we didn't know what to do because you were, like, shaking nervous. And I said, I know. And I was trying to control my nerves. But, yeah, just to come out of that, I mean, you talk about just, like, getting in the zone and just, like, trying to focus and zone in on, like, what you have to do. That's what I did. And I was glad. I didn't think that I would win it. And to come out on top, I mean, and then I put it in perspective, like, I haven't lost a meet this year, and it's so weird to me, like, I don't know, going into Rio, who knows what's going to happen, but I'm excited. I'm kind of an underdog going in, because this is my first Olympics. I mean, everybody else is, like, 32 years old, like, they've been to multiple, you know, games, and so I kind of just get to go in, keep my head low, and just, you know, do what I've been doing all season.
And javelin, it wasn't something that has been on your radar for very long. You grew up in Nebraska, went to Nebraska for two years.
Yep.
Then transferred down to A&M, was a heptathlete.
Yep.
And then once you got down here to A&M, switched over to javelin. So you're still kind of even a rookie to the sport.
I know. I tell people that all the time. I'm like, my training is so much different than everybody else's, because I've only done this for three and a half years. And so I don't have all the reps that all the pros have yet. So I just am, I'm so glad that I get to work with the coaches I get to work with. And then, you know, as time goes on, like in my mind, I'm going to train for the next two Olympics. Like if my body lets me and if God, you know, allows me to do that, I want to do that. And by the time that happens, like who knows what I could be throwing, and it's kind of in his hands. I'm excited though. I think that I have a lot of potential, and that's what people tell me anyway. So I trust them.
Sure. Sure. So you're going to go down on Wednesday. You'll stay in the Olympic Village,
yep.
I guess.
Yeah.
Who is that Olympic athlete that when you kind of see them walking off in the distance or in the dining hall or something, you might fangirl a little bit on the inside?
Well, everybody, you know, Michael Phelps, obviously. Honestly, if I met Kerry Walsh Jennings, I would love to meet her. She's amazing. Like, I think this is her fourth Olympics, and she's a three-time gold medalist. Like, she has three children, and she looks like a model. I mean, you cannot, like, the goals, ultimate goals, is that's her. And so, yeah, if I met her, that'd be great. I'd love to meet her.
Yeah, so I don't know, like you said, first Olympics. I don't know if you are too cognizant of what it's going to be like down there, mm-hmm. but as far as what, you know, itinerary say, yep. or what you've been told, kind of what is these next days going to look like for you?
Yeah. So in my head, and you know, things change once you get down there, but I'll leave the 10th, and then I'll get to Rio about 7:30 in the morning on the 11th. And then they say, just, you know, keep your schedule, like don't go to sleep or anything. I'm going to try to sleep on the plane. And then they have like certain processing things that I have to go through, and then they have like gifts and stuff, and then you know, casual.
Oh yeah, but, not no big deal.
Yeah, no big deal. And I was like, well, what are these gifts? Like somebody like messaged me today, and I was like, I didn't even know we got anything. Like this is a gift itself to be here. And so they're like, oh no, like you get some more stuff.
What are they? Have you heard?
Some headphones, some like Beats or something, and then we get a Samsung phone, like a brand new phone, and I don't even know what the other stuff is. I don't know. I'm along for the ride on this one, but because we got stuff just to like to go to the Olympics. So like I went to processing in Houston, and we'd stayed at the Hilton Americas or something like that. And so, and all of Team USA has to go there and get fitted for the opening and closing ceremonies and get their clothes or Nike stuff. And I came back with like four different bags full of just like clothing that was like tailor made to me. And I was like, Mom, I don't, like, this is the best day of my life. Like Ralph Lauren gave me a suitcase full of clothing. Like I have like polo golf shirts that I could wear the rest of my life. I was so excited. But yeah, so anyway, so I'll get down there and I guess I'll have practice. I'm going to practice in the evenings because I'll throw in the evening on the 16th and the 18th. And so get acclimated to the village. I'm probably not going to sightsee until after the 18th. Just because, you know, I'm there like the first, you know, 6 days that I'm there, it's a business trip. Like this is, I'm not going to change anything. Like I'm there to train. I'm there to compete. And so just really tunnel vision on that and not let it get too big. I do want to see some events if I can. So I'd love to see like gymnastics and swimming, obviously. But we'll see. I just got to look at my schedule and talk to the other athletes around me.
And probably some sand beach volleyball.
Yeah, I'd love to see some beach volleyball if I could. Yeah, mm-hmm. That'd be great.
Definitely, definitely. So throw on the 18th.
16th is prelim. So it's just like Olympic trials. So on the 16th, we get three throws. And then they take the top 12 to finals on the 18th. And then on the 18th, you get three throws again that day. And then whoever is in the top eight, I believe, make the second finals that night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are your, I mean, of course, mm-hmm. you're going to tell me that your expectations are to come back with a gold medal. Yeah. But what are your expectations?
You know, it's been weird. At first, when I first made the team, like, I was just, you know, content with making the team. And about that first, you know, week and a half, I was just thinking, you know, I'm just glad I'm going to Rio. Like, I'm glad I'm on Team USA. But then after that, I don't know what switched in me, but probably just my competitive side. I was like, there's no reason I can't end up on the podium. Like, yes, my mark is a little bit lower than the other people, but like my practices have been great and I know what I'm capable of. I just got to hit one. And at that point, you know, it's in God's hands. I can do what I can do and then, you know, just give it up to him. And if he has a plan, if that's what the plan is, then I'm all for it. But Ultimately, like, I want to come away with a gold medal and represent Team USA, represent the United States. And I'm excited. Like, my competitive side definitely came out.
Yeah. And you've thrown a little bit farther every other than the NCAA qualifier, which is just kind of throwing
it in. I wanted
to
get in.
Right. But you've grown just about every meet up until this point.
Yeah. And the one thing about me, and like, I think it's just because I've played sports my entire life. I'm a competitive person and, I don't like to get beat. And so I'm going to give it what I got. And I'm just going to compete with these women that have, you know, records of their own and have competed a way longer than I have. And, you know, it's kind of fun because now they have the targets on their back and I am the one. I'm like, you know what? I'm Maggie Malone and I'm coming for you at this point. And just, we'll see what happens. I'm excited. And if I throw farther than I have, you know, at NCAAs, I'll be happy with that. Anything farther than 62 meters, I'm going to be happy with.
Right. Was there any concern over the health risks? I know a lot of talk about that.
You know what? That's it kind of ticks me off because, and you know, there have other people that have come out and said this too. We've been working for this our entire lives, and it's really frustrating when, you know, certain media outlets, they make it seem worse than it is. I have friends down there already and they're like, Maggie, it is not bad. I don't know why the media made it seem so bad. You know what? I think as far as I know, like, Rio has done their job. And yeah, there's like health concerns with Zika. But OK, bring your bug spray, wear your long sleeves during the day. I mean, it's not a big deal. We're taken care of. The United States has put into place all these measures to make sure we're safe. And, you know, that's just a testament to what, you know, how strong of a country we live in and how blessed we are, because not other countries have that. But going in, I'm not that is the least thing that I'm thinking about on my list.
Zach, you need to get these media members on a leash.
Yeah,
will you work on this for us?
Yeah. Don't ruin it for us.
Anyway, so in just watching what you've been able to watch on TV and everything, mm-hmm. what are you looking forward to the most? Is there something that maybe you didn't see or notice until you saw it on TV that you're really excited to see, check out, do?
I'm just, you know, and I've seen a lot of people's Snapchat, so it's stuff that not everybody has seen, but I'm excited just to, like, even eat with all of these athletes that, you know, are from the best athletes in the world, from, you know, Grenada to, you know, Trinidad to, you know, London or England. It's like, I get to be with these people and get to know them. And I guess that's what I'm most excited for. I'm a people person, if you couldn't tell. So it's like, I just want to talk to people, get to know their story, you know, make some connections. So I guess that's what I'm most excited for. And then obviously, you know, feel a part of Team USA and keep working together, you know, because we're Team USA. We're going for one goal. We want that medal count up.
right. And what did I saw some A&M people tweeting out some pictures of you in your USA uniform. What was that like, first putting that on and kind of seeing it?
See, and that was the first time that I'd put it on. And then I just, like, I stood in the mirror and I was like, oh my gosh, like, to wear USA on your chest, like, that's just a feeling. I didn't ever think that I would get there. So it was just like a moment that I could take in and just be like, you know, thank God for everything that has happened this year. And, you know, just keep pushing. Like, that's how I feel. I'm like, you know, I'm representing the United States of America, the greatest country in the world. And there is some expectation to that. And I'm excited. And you know what? The other thing is that I'm not just representing the U.S., but I'm representing Texas A&M. I'm representing Nebraska. I've had so many Nebraskans just, like, reach out to me, and just my community. This is really embarrassing, but it's very small town Nebraska. I'm going back the 25th because on the 27th, they're doing a proclamation for Maggie Malone Day. And it's really, it's so, so nice. And the mayor, like, emailed me and asked me if I would come back, and my family. And I was like, yeah, like, that's great. Like, that is just small town Nebraska. And the whole community has really taken me in and just really, you know, surrounded me and all the prayers. So I'm excited. I feel like I have an army behind me. Like, that's how I feel going into Rio.
Well, Maggie, thanks for so much for coming
Absolutely.
In. I know you stole my segue a little bit. You're representing USA, but you're also representing the folks here at Texas A&M down in Rio. So thanks so much for coming in. Good
luck
to you. And
thank you.
We'll surely have to have you back in once you get back to College Station afterwards to get the recap.
When I have that medal around my
exactly.
neck.
Exactly. You need to wear all the Ralph Lauren.
Okay.
And bring the medal in and just bring all the swag so we can get a picture of all the swag.
Yeah,
so
we'll
anyway, thanks so much.
Awesome.
And
thank
good luck
guys.
To you.
Yep.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor with Sports Radio 1150 at The Zone, as well as Travis Brown, of course, with The Eagle and My Aggie Nation. And then also joining us on the line, well, not on the line, he's actually here in the studio as a guest, is Colin Deaver of KAGS, the NBC affiliate here in town. And we actually got to hear a little bit with Travis visiting with Maggie Malone last segment, which was awesome. Maggie was a great interview, and we wish her all the best of luck as she heads down to Rio. Of course, she's going to be competing in the javelin here in a few days. But let's turn our attention over to football. We come in and fall camp has just started. It's only been a couple of days now, but we were talking about what we really have seen so far from the limited time that we've got, and what are some real big talking points coming into fall camp. And you know, just talking things over, other than the offensive situation, when you got a new quarterback coming in, when you look at it on the defensive side, Daylon Mack, who played a pretty pivotal role as a freshman last year, albeit in a limited amount of time, he's actually dropped some weight, which is positive, and he's going to hopefully be in some more plays and stay out on the field a little bit longer this year.
Right. You can hear Coach Sumlin say at SEC Media Days, oh, well, Daylon Mack's dropped some weight. He's from, I think, something like down to like
a lot to not as much.
Right. And so you get out there and you're thinking, well, you know, that might make a little bit of difference. But when you actually see him, he is definitely slim and trim when it comes to defensive line standards and moving around back there. He had some explosion, and you saw in some plays last season where he was able to really get behind the offensive line and make some disruptive plays on some running backs. But those were kind of not really one-hit wonders, but just he had to have a lot of time to recharge the batteries before some of those other ones might happen with the kind of weight he was pulling around. But so this year, drop some weight, and everyone's saying that it's really going to reap dividends on his ability to stay out on the field and make some plays possibly back-to-back, or just be another guy on that defensive line that might need to draw some attention, which only opens things up for guys like Deshaun Hall and Myles Garrett getting into the backfield. And another point of that, too, is run stopping, because the run defense last year ranked 107th in the nation, something that several of the defensive players have mentioned as kind of a motivating point this year, because it's just certainly not where anyone wants to be. And really, frankly, there's only one way to go from there, and that's up. But that certainly will help to having that kind of depth on the defensive line as someone who can rotate in, and not only rotate in, but stay out there for a little bit of time, let other guys get some rest and make some plays.
Even for last year, you know, going into the year, the defensive line for A&M was supposed to be the strong point. As you pointed out, the rushing side of things, or at least stopping the run, is really kill the Aggies at times. And Derrick Henry ran all over the place again when Alabama came to town. And surprisingly, you know, Deshaun Hall and Myles Garrett were racking up the sacks, but at least stopping the run from that first wave on the defense was a pretty difficult task for Texas A&M. And that also brings you to the next question, the linebacking core. Coming in, they're healthy, but can they stay healthy? And Colin, I know with you covering the team last year, what was that? That was your first year, right, being here in town?
Yeah, last year I came in during fall camp right as things started.
So you've seen a little bit of Ataro Alaka, but that's the thing, a guy that has no ceiling. I mean, there's no limit to where he can go. He's a very talented player, but the big problem is he can't stay healthy. And can he stay healthy along with Sean Washington, who also suffered some injuries last year?
Right, and Alaka literally was never healthy at any point last year. I think dislocated his elbow in fall camp, and just then had some family problems the rest of the season, and
yeah,
just could never get going. I think he's going to be huge. I've said that a lot in terms of, you know, stopping the run in the middle of the field with Sean Washington. But I think Alaka, he's clearly far and away their best linebacker, and I think that he's just having him back is going to be huge when you have the defensive line that they have that we all think they're capable of having this year. Just to have him back healthy, you know, behind them is going to just be huge.
And another talented guy was Richard Moore, even as a freshman last year. But of course, a big question was he's got to put on weight, because he was, compared to other linebackers, especially in the SEC, was a bit diminutive. I mean, he was a small guy. And can he make that jump into being the kind of SEC linebacker they need him to be? And if anything bodes well, he's got a great defensive coordinator in John Chavis who's been able to pump out linebackers like that.
Right, and with Richard Moore, I mean, he looks more like a safety, but I mean, he put a huge hit on an Alabama running back last year. I mean, just absolutely laid him out on a screen pass. So he's definitely, for his size, he hits really hard, and I'm sure he put on a lot of weight in the summertime. Larry Jackson is kind of known for being able to do that with the players, the strength coach.
The Black Death.
Is that what they call him?
That's what they call him, the Black Death.
Oh, my gosh. That's interesting. but, yeah, no, so Richard Moore, I'm sure, is going to be improved. But, you know, we've had this discussion. Kevin Sumlin kind of went back and forth with us about it. I mean, they're going to call it a 4-3, but they're going to play a 4-2-5 a lot with Donovan Wilson kind of roving up from that nickel position. And mm-hmm. I think he's kind of another X factor. People call him Honey Badger Jr., I think. Is that right?
Yeah, something like, yeah.
Because he plays like Tyrann Mathieu. He made a huge jump in his sophomore season just in terms of being a ball hawk. And I think he's going to be very similar to that this year. Maybe you would think that with the trajectory he made last year, you'd think he'd be even better.
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned that weight that some of them put on. The sports performance coach Larry Jackson called it their body armor. He said that he thinks that not only does that just help them build strength and kind of have a better performance out there on the field like that, but it's a mentality thing too, because if you go in there as kind of an undersized linebacker like several of these guys were, yeah, you might kind of want them to throw the ball around a little bit more and kind of open it up, because if they challenge you up the middle, they might win that battle. But once you put on a little bit more of this weight, gotten a little bit more of this body armor, he seemed to think that the mentality might have changed a little bit, where they're like, okay, no, why don't you line up, run up the middle, challenge me, and let's see who wins in that kind of contest, because they just have that that extra weight, that extra mental edge to say, yeah, challenge me with the run.
Talked about Larry Jackson. He really made a point of pointing out the linebacking core and how much gains they had made and getting bigger and larger. What was you going to make a joke about me saying gains?
Gains.
The gains that he was able there, the linebacking core was able to get, Sean Washington, along with Otaro Alaka that he was talking about. You know, that, and that's big. That's going to prove big later on, hopefully, for Texas A&M and the defensive side of the ball. On the offensive side of the ball, you're looking at an offensive line that is now, well, it should be under Jim Turner, but of course he is under a suspension. And so, but he's been able to work with those guys throughout the spring. They're kind of been able to adjust to what he's got going on. And like him or not, Jim Turner is known as being a pretty dang good offensive line coach, at least around these parts, having spit out a couple, well, actually several first round picks. But do they have the kind of talent? And Avery Genesee is a guy that's obviously the top dog on that offensive line, but can they make up ground? And when you're talking about the center position, how important it is in a spread type offense with Noel Mazzoni, has been past few seasons. Now you're changing things out. Mike Matthews leaves. Now you got to get a new center back there.
Right. Well, we were talking to Trevor Knight at the SEC Media Days. We asked him about McCoy, and he said when he came in, you know, a lot of people didn't necessarily know who Trevor Knight was or what he was all about. When he came in and saw McCoy, he thought he was an upperclassman just from the way he carried himself, from the maturity, from the way he took care of business in the weight room and in the offseason. So kind of interesting that for this young guy coming in, he could kind of fool one of these new older guys into thinking, oh, this is a veteran. So it's probably bodes well for a guy who might see a lot of action straight off.
Right. Eric McCoy, you know, redshirt freshman out of Lufkin. I was watching at practice yesterday. He was running with the first team at center. You know, tough to tell how good he'll be from an offensive line drill in the 25 minutes that we get to watch practice. But just the fact that as a redshirt freshman, he's getting the chance to, you know, to run with the ones is I think bodes well for him. And I think Aggie fans should like that you know, that Kevin Sumlin and his staff have confidence in this, you know, freshman kid to step in and replace Mike Matthews, who is a longtime starter and kind of extended the Matthews lineage at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And of course you brought up Avery Genesee. I mean, he I think struggled at times last year. They're going to need him to be better, especially since they're you know, there's three starters that they have to replace along the line. And Jermaine Illuminor, who's the guy who played a little bit on the line last year, he's going to have to step up too.
I think the entire offensive line struggled at times last year for sure.
Right, right. Well, and the good thing also that A&M has going for them so far in this fall camp is they had a few question marks leading in on some guys that would report or not, but they did were able to pull in defensive tackle T.D. Moten, and they were able to get running back Rakeem Boyd in here with some questions and some problems with academic qualifications and whatnot. But as of Tuesday, both guys were on campus, especially Moten, who had kind of a long journey to get to Aggieland.
And it seemed like his teammates, or at least his current teammates now, they weren't his teammates then, but are really excited about it. You know, we got to hear a little bit from Deshaun Hall, and even though he's a defensive end and T.D. Moten is a defensive tackle, talking about him, spending time with him, getting to know him. It seemed all positive. And then when you talked with Larry Jackson, and he hasn't gotten a real good shot at T.D. Moten yet. Again, he wasn't able to work out with the guys, but he was talking about Moten losing, 15 to 20 pounds just on his own. And so that's also promising if you know a guy's got a work ethic like that. And then now Larry Jackson can mold him and shape him into the kind of player that he wants him to be.
Right, definitely, definitely. So we have this fall camp going around. Let's go around the horn here and kind of say, what is that one key for everybody in the room that you are looking to see A&M improve on or seeing A&M solve through fall camp as they lead into that opener for UCLA?
Well, I think the offensive line is the biggest part. You can talk about the quarterback situation all you want to. The wide receiver situation is fine. Keith Ford, who we really don't even haven't even talked about or seen that much, you know, but he's an experienced guy at running back. I think he'll do just fine. But offensive line is a big question. You know, Trevor Knight's not going to be able to work unless he's got people blocking for him. The running game's not going to be able to work unless there's people blocking. And A&M has made its living on offense for so long, so many years. They need that offensive line to work and to stick together. So I think the offensive line's a big one going in.
Yeah, I'm going to stick on the offensive side of the ball as well. And I think everything that they want to do offensively obviously is going to start with the offensive line, because if the offensive line hasn't meshed well, it isn't playing well together, then nothing is going to run well. But assuming that that happens, I want to see how much more creative offensively Neil Mazzoni is than maybe Jake Spavital was last year. I thought too many times last year it was, you know, pretty cut and dry. They didn't really try to do anything too outside of the box. For whatever reason, I didn't think that they were very creative. And I'm interested to see, you know, what Neil Mazzoni can do with a guy like Christian Kirk. He's so dynamic with everything that he does. He's the fastest player in the field. He's strong. He's, you know, he can do so many different things. He can catch the ball in traffic, go deep, whatever. I just want to see them use him in different facets of the game than they did last year, because I didn't think they were very creative with how they used Christian Kirk last year. And I think having a little bit of a better running game with Keith Ford this year is going to help that. That's my biggest thing, and the biggest thing I'm most curious about is how new offensive coordinators going to use all the different parts, all the talent that the Aggies have in a more creative way.
I'm going to dig a little deeper, and we're going to go into some special teams talk here. You know, as a former standout JV kicker, and I use the word standout very liberally as I was, you know, standing on the field, and that's about it. But there's a lot of questions in those special teams areas. They're having to replace both a kicker and a punter, and both of those players, while usually pretty undervalued and made fun of, can be the difference in a ball game. So especially with Jeff Banks out a little bit at the beginning of the fall camp here due to that chalk talk suspension, Kevin Sumlin's in there having to pull a little bit of a double duty and has been in there coaching some special teams. And we'll see how much that affects how well the special teams plays and how cohesive of a unit it is without their coach guiding them through the beginning of it. But they're going to have to name a kicker and a punter, and it's going to be two new guys, and we'll have to see how those guys perform, because like I said, those guys can win or lose a ball game for you.
Yeah, for sure. No, you bring up a very valid point. I can tell you that folks that watched Taylor Bertolette missing extra points back in 2012 can attest to just how important special teams is, how important a kicker is. And, you know, you're talking about Drew Kayser, a guy who set records at Texas A&M, And it's been a while since you've been without him, so you might have gotten a little greedy. You might not realize just how hard the punting game is. And for Aggie fans, they might see some of that this year, some growing pains from young players.
Well, the pontificating game continues through fall camp as we have several more weeks of practice before we actually get to see some of these players hit the field and see what they can do. So we'll continue that next week here on the My Aggie Nation podcast. Want to give a big shout out to Colin Deaver. Thank him for coming in, talking some Olympics, talking some Aggie football. Also, the great Maggie Malone, and wishing her good luck as she heads down to Rio for the Olympics, throwing that javelin. Also, as always, Zach Taylor over there in the zone. We'll be back next week with episode 3 of the My Aggie Nation podcast. Until then, we'll see you later. Everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me.